In this episode, I sat down with my friend Andy Barker. He was in town to attend a local business conference within the industry that he's in, and he made time for us to come over here, sit down with us, and share with us. And I'm so glad he did, and I'm appreciative, and I think that you'll enjoy this episode. Thanks for listening. Welcome to the Banker Life Podcast. I'm your host, James Nethery. And if you've listened for any length of time, you know that I'm always excited when guests actually come into the studio and sit down with us and share their time with us. Today is no exception. I mean, the exception may be that I'm really excited because Andy is with us today. And I'm going to tell you a little bit about Andy and then introduce him, and then he can share as much as he wants. But I think we met We first spoke in 2021. He became a client in 2022-ish. He's lived several states away. And this man is a salt of the earth man. He's a very successful businessman. This is my opinion and my understanding of what I know. I mean, just an incredible guy, very, very intelligent. And did I say very successful? The guy has it going on, salt of the earth person. And I'm quite sure that you'll enjoy this episode. So, Andy, welcome to the Banker Life Podcast. How are you, sir?
Thank you, James. Super excited to be here. Perfect. Super excited to be here.
Did you come in here just to sit down with us? I'd love him to say yes.
We're in Fort Worth. we are in Fort Worth. We, being my wife and I, are in Fort Worth for a business convention. But I don't always make it to every business convention for that industry. And when I found out this one was going to be in Fort Worth this year, I had an extra special reason to come to Fort Worth. So we added a few days on the front of that trip so we could come in here and hang out with you guys.
And I'm greatly appreciative. You know, we had talked about, you being a guest here, I think maybe last year, to just didn't happen. So I'm really excited about this. I'd like for people really to, hear you and just get a better picture of you. So if you would, if you don't mind, and you share as much as you want, and I don't want to control the narrative, but, share with us as much as you'd wish, family, business, your faith, how you became exposed to this idea, and, whatever experience, and he has a lot of experience, okay? I know he looks very, very young, and he is, but he has a lot of business experience. His business story is incredible, my opinion. So share as much with us as you would, please.
Oh, well, thank you. Well, I find value in tuning in and watching all these YouTubes that you guys put on and so that you can find people that you can relate to. So maybe somebody will be able to relate to my story and kind of catch the vision of what you guys call the 10%. And so maybe somebody will be, from the area geographically or appreciate maybe my little story that I've got, but from Noblesville, Indiana, five generations deep, and super proud of that, and was born in Noblesville, live in Noblesville, will probably graduate from Noblesville, and was born into an awesome family. I've got one of those stories that is, I've been dealt really good cards, so don't mess it up. Some people are dealt bad cards and they've got to change the narrative and change their legacy. But I was born into a very loving Christian family. Not only my parents, but my both sets of grandparents, strong, godly men and women. And so we were taught right from wrong from day one, ABCs, 1, 2, 3s, Father, Son, Holy Ghost. And so I'm really thankful, and especially the older you get, the more you see in the world and the more it becomes clear to you what's really going on, that I was taught right from wrong. And I won't get off on a tangent, but a lot of the world's problems here are that we don't agree on what's right and wrong anymore. That needs to be the foundation of the conversation. But anyways, so born into that great family and really had a lot of entrepreneurship in my family, uncle that owned construction company, my grandfather owned a metal fabricating business, kind of a fun story, but my grandpa on my mom's side of the family built a lot of downtown Detroit.
Really?
Was an I-beam walker.
Oh,
the pictures you see of people eating their lunch, sitting on an I-beam suspended in the air. My grandfather was one of those guys. He was a tough guy.
That was like pre-OSHA days too.
I'm pretty sure they probably were not meeting all the safety regulations, but they got the work done. And so just a really strong roots in all, every direction. And a lot of our family growing up lived around us. So both sets of grandparents, aunts and uncles, just really kind of a leave it to Beaver childhood. And those that are have been around long enough know what that that cartoon or that, it's not really a cartoon, I guess. That was more of a series, TV series. But it was in black and white, so you know it was special. But it had to leave it to Beaver story to it. So I knew early on, especially as I started meeting kids in the neighborhood and going to school and figuring out, hey, it's not like this for everybody, that I was very blessed. And so I was the middle of three boys and definitely the black sheep. And but man, my brothers are rock stars. My older brother is a lieutenant colonel in the Air Force, retired. Still works with the Air Force, and my younger brother is a commodities broker. We always tease him because at one point in his career, he was the second big cheese. You know, everybody talks about the big cheese, but he was the second big cheese because he brokered and handled the second largest amount. I may be embellishing that a little bit, Joe. I'm not sure, but I think that's fairly accurate, actually. And but both of my brothers are very humble. And wouldn't brag on themselves, so I've got to brag on them. My older brother was this big shadow. He was valedictorian and captain of the football team, and I mean, he kind of had the trifecta, right? I mean, he had looks and personality and brains. I mean, he had it all, still does. But he was a big shadow to follow through school, and so I would come 3 years behind him, and I would come into the same teachers, and they would say, after maybe a month, they would say, "Wow, you're Rob Barker's brother. Are you sure?" Question. And I would say, "Yeah, he gets the A's, I get the C's, but I have more fun." So, you know, we got through it. So apparently I received a diploma. I think they wanted to get me out of the school system. But that's how I grew up, very in a rural area, and we didn't live on a farm, but in a farming community. And was taught, you know, the discipline of hard work, mm-hmm. and physical labor, and on the weekends would bale hay and help my grandfather and dad feed the cattle. And my great grandfather had a farm that he had left to the family, and so they farmed it to keep it in the family. And learned a lot of great valuable lessons, you know, with that kind of a childhood. So had a lot of fun. Loved working outside. Was a key ingredient of kind of my journey, my path so far, anyway. And so that's my quick history.
That sounds very idyllic. So, yeah, you're blessed to that experience, opportunity.
Yeah, it was fun.
So you made it through high school, though.
Made it through high school, yeah. I don't think my mom and dad were sure that was going to happen, but we've got some fun stories, and so we had a lot of fun doing that. I played some sports. I wasn't great at anything. If a ball was involved, it was bad. But I learned how to keep a lot of the books.
This man's humble.
We had a small school at the time. Shout out to Hamilton Southeastern in Fishers. It was tiny when I was there. You know, it was 180 kids in my class. Mm-hmm. So if you didn't do everything, they didn't have all of the different teams and swing choir and all that stuff. And so, but I did take a liking to wrestling. And I wasn't very good at that. I learned how to count ceiling tiles. Anybody that's been a wrestler knows what that means. But we had fun doing it, and always loved that part of it. All my buddies were big athletes, big guys. And so, you know, I learned to pick fights and then run, let them fight it out. We had fun in school, and but always worked. I had a key thing happen that really was pivotal. We were a middle income family. My dad worked at General Motors. We always had more than enough. And he taught us really good life lessons on biblical principles like tithing, and also practical principles that come with that, like learning to live on less than what you make would be really good for most of America to also capture. But again, I say it humbly because that was taught to me. And so, you know, it wasn't something that I take credit for figuring out. It was modeled to us both in deed and in word. And so mom and dad taught us a lot of good principles, and my dad was never usually the first to get something. So I'll date myself a little bit. The VHS, You know, you go back to Betamax, some of those fun things. We never had the first one in the neighborhood.
At least they were in color.
Right? Exactly. Yeah. I can remember when the Wizard of Oz went color. I mean, that was crazy. But you know, he was usually would wait, study it, not be on the bleeding edge, but we would always have one of the nicest.
Yep.
And so he just taught me some principles about delayed gratification and making good purchases and paying for quality and things of that sort. So that was a great upbringing. Had a dad that really taught us right from wrong, modeled being a strong, godly man, good husband, you know, very honoring to my mom. And I hit a home run really with, like I said, my job's not to mess that up. So we're trying, the story's not over. I'm still working at it. So, but they thought I might not make it out of high school. I had a pretty good run through. I kind of sprinted. I used to hang out. Most of my friends, I got along better with their parents than I did with them. Mm-hmm. Would kind of find myself connecting more. And I noticed that from an early age. And I always kid everybody. I say, man, in 20 years or 30 years, I'm not going to have any friends because most of my friends are 20, 30 years older than me. But I learned from them. I was very interested in what they were doing. And so I was always thinking 10 or 20 years ahead. But there was a pretty good ornery streak there from my early to mid teenage years. And like I said, I did not follow my older brother's footsteps. So I think my older brother was kind of like, wow, you're a hot mess. And my younger brother's saying, okay, as long as I'm not that bad, I'm going to be okay.
That's the limit.
So I found myself doing some crazy things. They would not be considered crazy in today's world, but for us, it was kind of crazy. And, but I always liked to work and I wanted to make my own money and wanted to have, you know, the coolest clothes. And I got kind of caught up in that in middle school and whatnot. But we lived far enough outside of the school district that our phone number was long distance from everybody else we went to school with once we hit middle school. And that used to be a big deal. There were no cell phones, you know, you could just dial away. So there were these circles on the map. And every time you called a little further away, it was more expensive. So I took an interest to a little girl in middle school and started calling quite a bit. And at age 13, 14, I had $300 and $400 phone bills.
Wow.
Yeah. And this is a long time ago. And so my mom and dad loved me so much that they said, we're not going to pay your phone bill. You're going to pay your phone bill. So I started cutting grass. I used to mow the cemetery for the church. And man, they were getting a good deal. You know, we would mow the cemetery, take me, you know, 10 hours. And I think they paid me $30 back then.
That was before weed eaters too.
Yeah. We used to have to pull it by hand. So we would push mow that bad boy, but it was good exercise and helped me think about the things that I had done wrong. And, you know, but I spent a lot of time, you know, around gravestones, which is kind of interesting. Right. And you talk about graduating and death benefits. So I can give you most of the names that are in the cemetery at the childhood church that I grew up in.
Wow.
and I did knock a few of those over on occasion, but we stood them back up. But that got me working. I loved the physical labor side of it. And then that got me very motivated to earn more money to pay my bills at age 13 and 14.
Yeah.
So maybe.
Did you keep generating, you know, the $300 and $400?
Yes. Bills? Yes. I was sick enough that I kept that going. But I say that, you know, God used that in my story to get me headed in the right direction. And the more I worked, the less trouble I caused. Mm-hmm. Okay. I wasn't distracted by maybe doing the wrong thing. So it really did save me from a lot of heartache because I kind of had to do it first. Whatever it was going to be, I needed to do it first and do it on the biggest scale and, you know, make a spectacle out of it. So some of that wasn't always channeled well. But we used that to get busy working. And then, I worked my way through high school. That's where we were on the story here. And so I had a friend whose parents owned a landscape company. Great people. And they gave us jobs. And we were, so probably, you know, as I went into my eighth grade and freshman year of high school, I was helping them. I was mowing grass. I loved to mow grass. When I was a kid, I used to, I mean, 5, 6, 7 years old, I can remember thinking, oh, if I could just have a mower and mow every yard in the neighborhood. And these were big lots, you know, back then they were 2-acre yards type of thing. I could just mow all week and I thought that'd be great. I still like to mow grass. I don't do it much anymore, but it's kind of ironic. I ended up mowing grass. So I worked for them for a couple of years in high school, making good money. We work after school and on the weekends. They taught me how to landscape and do it the right way. They're very talented designers and creative. But they had some struggles with their business at a time when I think the economy was down and I didn't realize it was down. And apparently we had a recession right around 1990 or something. And I wasn't old enough to really understand what that meant. But so we were looking for a new job and we found ourselves one day I was sitting with another buddy after school and we kind of had our, you know, I kind of do one of these on the kitchen counter and his dad came home. His dad was an attorney and became a major influence in my life, Bob Bruner. And he says, what's wrong with you guys? He says, well, we don't have jobs or we need to get new jobs. I don't remember exactly what happened, but he says, well, you guys like cutting grass, don't you? And he says, yeah. And I said, well, he goes, why don't you just go do it on your own? And we were like, oh, okay. And that was the extent of that decision. So I went home and told my mom and dad, I said, hey, I'm gonna start a landscape company with Josh, my buddy, Josh. And he's, oh, okay. And I don't know, I have no idea what my mom and dad were thinking. They probably just thought, good, you know, you need to stay busy and stay out of trouble. And so we started a landscape company and his dad helped us get started and set up our first bank account. And he even put the first bit of seed money in there. Little did I know what capital even meant at that time. And we had a little checkbook and our office was an upstairs bedroom of his house. And our warehouse was one bay in his 3-car garage. And so we've got some great stories out of that. And so my buddy's last name was Bruner. So it was Barker and Bruner. So we named the company B&B. And you know, that was our sophomore year of high school, first business. And we got out and we stuffed flyers in people's mailboxes and we had the postmaster call and say, hey, you can't do that. That's illegal because there's no postage on that. We're like, oh, whoops, you know, we're just a couple of kids figuring it out. But we used to cut grass for $10 a yard, literally, you know, and which is laughable because in today's dollars, that might be 20. So, you know, whatever. I don't have the inflation calculator, but even if it doubled, it still was bad. You can't go load your trailer for $20. We used to cut grass and we just got started that way. But by the time we got to our senior year of high school, we had a couple of mowing crews. And back then we wore these things called pagers. Mm-hmm. So our clients could get a hold of us. And, I had statute of limitations has run out on this. So I can tell you that in my senior year, I had come a long way and they put me in the guidance office and I wrote hall passes that was not electrified at that time and digitized, I should say. And so I used to write my own hall pass on sunny days. I might not be at school. I might be out mowing grass and working with our guys that were cutting grass at the time, but we had some commercial contracts and things were going really well for a couple of high school kids. We had cell phones mounted to the dash of our truck. Oh yeah, it's crazy. So I'm getting long-winded, but you well, know,
you were knocking it out of the park.
People
in
that
high school.
People that know me know I get long-winded, but bottom line was senior year, my buddy from high school decides that he's in love and he's going to graduate midterm and he's going to get married. Now, keep in mind, it was really just the two of us. We had some summer help, but it was just the two of us. So we, you know, it was laughable. I mean, we weren't doing a ton of revenue. And so his dad and I, when he got back from his wedding, you know, I told his dad, I said, hey, we're not big enough here for one guy to be in the office and another guy to be working. And so some things just weren't working out. You know, we were 18, right? So he was making crazy decisions. I was making crazy decisions. I love the guy to this day. There's no bad blood between us. But I told him, I said, hey, I think we should probably part ways. You're getting married and going on. And you should buy the business or I'll buy the business. So I bought the business. His dad helped me buy the business. And I won't tell you what I paid for it, but it's a lot less than I think most people probably spend more on coffee in a year's time than probably what I paid him for that business. But I also inherited debt that was about 6 times what I had paid. So being relative, I had a uh-oh moment when I found out because he was managing the books at that time. It wasn't me. So his dad allowed me to stay in the garage there for a few years, and we built the business. And so that's where I was when I graduated from high school. I had the landscape company and you know, a lot of debt.
And a lot of debt. And so, but business continued, you know, however that looks. And when did you start doing other things or in business?
Yeah. So it was, I graduated from high school in 92. And one of the things that had happened, which I really give credit to my original business partner for, is he had a friend that was in college at the time. And he says, he comes home one day after school, so to speak, and he says, "Hey, I hired this guy. I'm going to pay him on the side. He's going to do cold calling for us." I'm like, "You did what?" And we have like $5 to our name. You know, how are we going to pay this guy? But he made phone calls and he stumbled across an opportunity to get a snow contract. And in Indiana, it snows every once in a while. We're not the snow belt, but it snows and people there freak out when it snows. And so we stumbled across a commercial company that allowed us to handle their snow when we were still high school students. And so that became a building block of the business that I stayed in snow removal from the very first winter to this day. The snow removal company has grown considerably there in central Indiana. And so after high school, and of course he had gotten married and I'd bought the business from him, and I had really contemplated, am I going to go to college or not? And I had a guidance counselor on one of the days when I was at school. She sat down with me and she says, "Hey, you need to go away to a four-year college or you're going to make a big mistake." And I went home and I talked to Bob. I remember Josh's dad, who was basically the mentor at that time. And Bob says, "Well, you know, you need to think about that." He says, "Look what you got going already." And he says, "I just challenge you to think through." And this was a really pivotal piece of learning advice at the time. He says, in life, take advice on any given topic from people who are where you want to be in life. And so he wasn't putting the guidance counselor down because she was a great lady, still is, to my knowledge, and that she's still alive. And she was trying to give me the best advice she had on the path that she had been on. But Bob was a business owner. And he says, maybe you think about where you want to be. And at 18, do you really know where you want to be? But right. I figured out I'll take Bob's advice. So I went to a community college there in Indianapolis and started taking courses on business and things that I was interested in. Interestingly enough, all of a sudden I started getting good grades. It's kind of an aha moment.
Funny how that works.
Funny how that works. But I was interested in it. But the business kept growing. And at one point, trying to get classes done on an evening and a weekend, I just had to say, I don't know how many credit hours I had. It's probably public. Go look it up. But I think I was somewhere between 2 and 3 years. And I said, I'll come back to this later and finish it if we need to. And I might still have to do that, but I haven't gone back yet. And so we kept growing the business. And it really grew pretty quick. I've had a lot of great mentors in my life. And at this point, you're one of those. Okay. Oh, thank you. But I moved on from Bob. I moved out of the 3-car garage and my dad says, "You know, I've always wanted a pole barn out there next to the house. Why don't we build one together?" So dad was still working for General Motors at the time. He started at GM when he was 18. Wow. And worked there 30 years. Anyways, more on that later. But he says, "Why don't we build a pole barn together?" He said, "I've always wanted one and maybe we can split it." And so I said, "Oh, that'd be great, Dad." So moved all the landscape stuff that I had into this little 2,500 square foot pole barn and ran out of there, lived at home. And both of my brothers at that point, I think, were gone or mostly gone, had moved on. My older brother went to the Air Force Academy and my younger brother went to Kansas State, and they both very successful in school. And I kept building the business, kept getting opportunities afforded to me to take on commercial contracts. So we really grew the business and became landscaping, irrigation, and snow and ice management on somewhat of a larger scale. I mean, for a 20-year-old and a 21-year-old to be getting commercial contracts, when I look back on it, I think those people were crazy. I still had braces on my teeth and things like that. But I was single and loved to work and was a workaholic. And to this day, I still struggle with that. But I got real busy getting busy. And so I built that business, kept building it, kept working hard, and was living at home. And then I went to a meeting one time. Some of your listeners will resonate with this. As there's a whole lot of generations that won't think anything of it. But I went to this meeting one time on being your own business, become your own business. And I thought, well, I'm already in business. What's this all about? But a good friend of mine invited me to a meeting. And come to find out, long story short, it was multi-level marketing. Mm-hmm. It was the Amway business, right? Now, they would say, generations before that would say that word with kind of a nasal sound, you know, Amway, whatever. But I didn't know anything about it, right? I just thought, okay, what's this all about? I never stuck with that, but I can tell you the group that I met there really gave me some good influences on building my library of books. Mm-hmm. It really taught me, you know, you are who you associate with. You become the books that you read. You know, and that, and how you spend your time. So I really built a great library of good, solid, kind of foundational business books: How to Win Friends and Influence People, mm-hmm. Think and Grow Rich, different things. Some of those books Zig Ziglar. Yeah, absolutely. So that really springboarded me into starting to become more of a business owner, you know, and starting to try to figure out and see through the thick smoke of what's it really mean to own a business rather than just kind of be self-employed.
Were you exposed to Jim Rohn during that?
I don't know that I was.
Okay.
Until I started reading the books that you guys recommend. Mm-hmm. Ironically, I mean, I've got a pretty good library of books at this point, but love some of his sayings, you know, love some of his sayings. I use them, you know.
And I don't want to throw you off, but the late 80s, you know, I was exposed to Amway and that wasn't me. I didn't really like the MLM thing, but you know, there was good people in there, and the self-improvement, you know, aspect of that I really liked. And then from there, it's kind of a precursor to Prime America, A.L. Williams, you mm-hmm. know, and got exposed to life insurance, and which I thought was good and everybody should have, but it was an MLM kind of construct. But I was exposed to a lot of, not Jim Rohn at that time. Jim Rohn came into my life later, but just, you know, Zig Ziglar and self-improvement, Tom Hopkins, and
oh, yeah.
I can't even name them all, but there were a bunch of them.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I don't want to interrupt you, sir.
Oh, I can think of so many good Jim Rohn quotes, phrases, you know, that I use now. You know, I was the first one I had heard coin the phrase, you know, discipline beats talent when talent lacks discipline.
Yep.
You know, I love that one. Love that one. You know, I think he may be the one that also says it's not how smart you are, it's how you're smart. And that one I had to noodle on for a little bit. Mm-hmm. And that one resonates with me. That one you can go, you know, pretty far with it.
One that resonates with me is we all suffer from one of two pains. Mm. It's either the pain of discipline or the pain of regret.
Absolutely.
So, yeah. Anyway.
Yeah, it's going to hurt either way. Yeah, it's going to hurt either way.
The pain's going to be there. You just choose your pain.
That's exactly right.
You know?
Yeah. And
each of them have a result as well.
Yeah. So there I was, post high school, right? Living at home, loving it because my mom and dad are awesome people. And they were so easy on me as far as just giving me the freedom to do whatever it seemed like I was passionate about. Mm-hmm. Where my brothers had went on more of a track of typical, you know, college, and one was military and one was more, you know, a big corporate, and they've both done incredibly well. But mom and dad, I think, understood, okay, he learns a little different, and let's give him a little bit wider. My dad always says, you know, I tell people, I always knew better. I just didn't always do better.
Right.
And so I was probably the topic of most Sunday post-church, you know, gatherings, like, oh, did you hear what he did this week? And, but my dad says he always knew that my heart was right and yep. he could see in there. And I think he may be related. I've heard a few stories, you know, of his childhood over the years that maybe he had some fun times too. But, yeah, he saw through that and they stuck in there with me. And so we kept growing the business and I had some building blocks. All I remember about, and go back to that Amway, is that I was brought into what they called the Britt system. So there was a guy named Bill Britt And then he had all kinds of people right over the years. And I'm sure he was probably 60s, 70s, maybe even 50s. I don't know. But he, his main goal, I went to a weekend thing in North Carolina one time. It was called Brit School. Now, somebody listening, there's going to be several people that go, oh, man, I know what that guy's talking about. I just remember going, and it wasn't about selling anything. Mm-hmm. It was about Sunday morning altar call. And I realized what his end mission was. It was to really share the gospel to people. You know, and so I think it was unique because it's just like you in the insurance industry, not everybody's beating the same drum and as passionate about things as you are. Some people are just looking to do deals, and you've got a much larger, bigger mission that you're after. And that's a lot deeper than that. And that was Bill Britt. So it made me feel good about taking the advice, and the books that they were recommending were much deeper than just how to sell something.
Yep.
And so I took a lot of those building blocks with me. Then I move and kind of started in with my next mentor, and his name was Fred Mangin. And he was my best friend at the time, who I still think the world of. It was his dad. And he saw something in me that was a little bit of entrepreneurship, probably workaholic too. And I remember we were sitting one day and he says, hey, he goes, you ever think about starting a second business? And I was 22 at the time.
You already had three though.
Well, we had one business that did three things.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, B&B.
Okay.
Yeah,
I got
yeah.
you. Okay.
And so Fred says, you ever think about starting a second business? And of course, at the time I thought, well, yeah, we could do that. I think I've got 4 extra hours a night, you know, I mean, because at that point, right, I'm quoting it, doing it, billing it, right, doing all those things. And you know, balancing the checkbook and all these things. It was barely that the computer had come on the scene, right? I mean, 1990, I think everybody got their first desktop. Remember Gateway computers, right? The Holstein Cal boxes. Anyway.
$2,500 for,
oh my goodness, you know, yeah.
20 right. megabytes of memory or whatever.
You thought dial-up was bad. Yeah. I mean, those first computers were slow. But anyway.
128K, something.
Okay. Oh, it was so bad. And so Fred says, hey, you want to start another business? He said, I just got back from a big convention and I got an idea. Well, anyway, I said, sure. So 1998, we opened, I started my second business, Real-Time Detention. And Fred taught me, he mentored me for several years on how to build a manufacturer's rep agency. Mm-hmm. And we specialized in the correctional criminal justice markets, jail and prison construction, which is why I'm in town this weekend for the American Jailers Association conference.
So do you build them?
We're involved in building them.
Okay.
Yeah, we work with municipalities and owners to, sometimes we help them find maybe a architect or a construction manager or maybe a key component of how they're going to build or manage that facility once it's open.
Kind of like consulting,
a consulting
component of it.
Yeah, and then we represent manufacturers of the products that go into those.
I got it. Okay.
We don't physically take delivery and install them. Right. We've got some really awesome, unique specialty contractors across the country that install that and take care of it. So we'll assist architects as they design, owners as they are making
decisions.
That's
pretty unique. I mean, I can't imagine that being a very broad market or, you know, but
yeah,
interesting.
It's a niche.
Yeah.
And I didn't even, you know, some people say niche. I don't know, but I say niche.
You're dating yourself, sir. That's what I say.
What do you say?
I say niche.
Yeah, right.
Younger people say niche.
Niche.
And I'm like, I go back to, I think Zig Ziglar on niche, or maybe that's what he said, niche. I don't know, but I'm niche. I'm a niche guy.
Yeah.
But, you know, I can talk about niches too. So, I mean, I know what we're talking
about.
Well,
you're in a niche. I mean, you've hit a niche. And so I didn't know it at the time, but things that I was doing at B&B Group, you know, as a kid, we were niche. The very first snow client wanted snow and ice management. That sounds fancy, doesn't it, for plowing snow? But literally, there's a niche in that industry that is very unique, and that's what they wanted. So my very first contract was specialized snow and ice management, and so I thought it was all that way. And of course, out of that became, that was our norm, and we were referred to other clients that wanted that same level of service. So to this day, we are the Indianapolis snow and ice management company you call if you have niche level service that you need, basically the zero tolerance contractors. I always tell people, if our clients want us to stand there and shoot the flakes out of the sky, you know, and so it's a lot more than just...
What's that pay? I may be interested. Yeah.
Well, it costs you a lot because you lose a lot of sleep doing it, but our team crushes it in delivering that. So it costs a lot to be in it. Takes a lot of capital. Yep. But we'll get to that part of the story, which is why this industry is so unique to support really any business endeavor. But where were we? We were back on starting company number two. So
yeah, number two. And I'm just listening intently, and it's like, it's everything that you've done up until that point is almost built upon each other. The principles, the ideas, you know. So
yeah,
I'm excited to hear Crescendo.
Yeah, they were building blocks, and something really critical happened when, so after I was approached by Fred to start business number two, I was about 2 years into dating my now wife Bridget, and we'll be 26 years married this year.
Wow!
And trust me, yeah, she's in the room. Anybody that knows me knows I married way out of my league. Yeah,
no question
about it, right? And so thankfully, as soon as she said yes, I quit talking.
You knew when to quit.
That's what good salespeople do, right? When they say yes, stop talking. So yeah. She said yes, and I thought, okay, good, God, you know, let's get this done. So, we were married in 1999, and. So that was kind of critical because I was still running and gunning and starting companies. And I always say, you know, it was nothing for me to go, yeah, let's go get another federal ID number, yeah. You know,
the workaholic
and let's get it done. And so Fred mentored me through, you know, how to own a manufacturer's rep agency. And because he had represented a company that made jail locks, I understand your office building used to be some courthouses.
This was a sub courthouse of the county, sub courthouse. As a matter of fact, we're sitting in the old courtroom, which is why we're here. My daughter Riley, who's 18, she was 3 or 4 at the time. We physically came in here and dismantled the court, the judge's bench.
That's awesome.
The juror's chairs.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
But that's why we're here for the room.
Right.
You know.
Yeah, so. Figured. See, my mom and dad, they were always worried I was going to be in a courtroom someday, and here I am.
Previous, you know.
But it was kind of ironic. I ended up in the jail business. You know, I just, right? I've stayed on the right side of that, because I promise you, there were a few times I probably should have been in an elevated situation as a teenager, but thankfully I was never, you know, hauled off to jail. So, you know, they were lenient on me. But so Fred mentored me through that industry, and we were able to add manufacturers that we represented. And then I was able to surround myself with people who are much, much more experienced than I was in the industry. And to this day, those people are still in my lives, and they are.
Is that still a habit you have?
What's that, starting businesses?
No, well, that and surrounding yourself with people with more experience or more knowledge or what have you. And then
I'm starting less businesses this day. My beautiful bride told me after the kids were born, maybe you need to slow down on the federal ID numbers.
How long were y'all married before children?
Just 1 year. Yeah. Okay. Our daughter was born 1 year after we were married.
So you're starting a new business, a second business, and the first one that does three different things is, you know, you're running it. That's a lot of work. And so, you know, that work life, you know, work, home life balance was off from the beginning for you, sir.
Yeah. And then we've not figured that out. So, you know, the only thing I can do is try to compensate, say, well, we'll play hard when we can, and then we'll work hard.
I don't feel alone. Thank you for sharing that.
I think balance is maybe, I don't think we're going to get that till we graduate, but we're still working on that.
It's a goal.
Yeah, and it's a goal.
It's a constant. Yeah.
Yeah.
Important.
So we 1999, Bridget and I get married, and I had business number two started in 1998. And my dad retired in 99, literally 2 weeks after we were married. And I said, hey, Dad, do you want to come and work part time for the landscape irrigation and snow company? I said, we just need a little help. And it'd probably just be 20 hours a week, you know, and Dad started, I think, and he never worked less than 50 hours a week.
Yeah.
And he was the first irrigation technician. He was kind of like the Maytag repair guy, you know, nothing was really broken, but he would go take great care of our clients. And he was really pivotal in how we grew that line of service. And So anyway, so there we were, 1999. Dad retires, comes work for us part-time. Such a blessing and an honor. We were able to, when we had our daughter, Brooke, in 2000, we were able to have my mom and dad. My mom's a retired RN. So my heart goes out to nurses, special place in my life for RNs. And she ended her career in home hospice. Mm-hmm. So she has a gift of being there when people graduate. And very cool. But anyway, having dad come, he really was able to transfer a lot of wisdom and knowledge. And my dad's dad, my grandpa Barker, by far, hands down, the most godly man I've known that's walked the earth, okay, wow. in my lifetime, yep. okay? And my dad's just chip off the old block. And I always tell everybody, if I get to the end and people say, hey, he was kind of reminding me of his dad and his grandpa, that's a win. You know, that's a win. We'll see. We'll see. Anyway, so we were able to bring dad on and he worked with us for a long time. He's still technically on the payroll. We've slowed him down quite a bit. Life may have slowed him down quite a bit too, but he's doing well and he still gets involved and he's great at telling jokes. And he's just a real blessing to have around. He's a lot of wisdom in my dad. So it's pretty neat. So we got married, had our first child, Brooke. And then a couple of years later, we had our second child, Blake. And you see the trend. There's some B's in my life.
Yeah.
And I wanted to say something about writing goals. So one of the things that I picked up, I was given a book when I was 18 years old, two key pieces of advice. My mom and dad always modeled tithing to me. Mm-hmm. Okay. And I want to be careful because I don't want anybody to think I'm some prosperity gospel person. I'm not. But the law of tithing, you know, in the Bible, and mom and dad modeled that to us as kids. And when I was 18 and for an 18-year-old starting to make some money, I had read some books that were given to me, again, by some really great mentors, and it talked about the importance of tithing. Now, as I look back, some of those books were skewed. There's a few of them I won't give to my kids because they were kind of name it, claim it stuff, and I don't sign on for that. But some of them were very pivotal in developing that best practice, that habit, really being obedient, right? And the other one, thing, you're going to have to edit because I totally went mind blank on the other thing.
Couple of things that you were modeling, the godly men and your parents, and you're young, 18, and they modeled tithing.
Yeah.
And so, and you were knocking it out of the park. So you, I would, writing goals.
Oh, writing goals. Yeah. So another book I was given was about writing goals. And I had never written goals down. So there I was, you know, living at home one night, finished reading a chapter in the book, and I thought, all right, I'm going to write some goals down. I thought it was kind of goofy, right? It's like first time my minister told me to journal. I thought, I don't journal. That's not. Well, I wish I'd have started journaling sooner.
Sure.
Well, anyway, so I write these goals down on the back of my fax machine owner's manual. Mm. Okay.
Was it a roll paper fax?
It was a Sharp facsimile. Yes, they got the pink lines when it was almost out. Oh, yeah. The thing was brilliant. We had some big deals come across that fax machine, you know, back in the day.
when I met my wife, it was all over the phone, and she faxed me a picture on roll paper fax in black and white.
I love it. So, okay. I love it, yeah. Now, if you don't laminate those, they fade, right? You lose your picture, so you got
to. Yeah, that one's lost to history, you know.
So I write these goals down, and one of my goals was, by the time I'm a certain age, I will marry a girl with the initials BB.
Stop it.
Okay. And it wasn't because the company was B&B. Okay. Didn't have anything to do with it. The girl that I took a liking for in middle school and high school's initials were B&B. Okay. So I was thinking that at the time, although at the time I wrote that, that was over. That was torched, and it was good. It was good. It wasn't meant to be, obviously, but I wrote that down on the back of that, and there I find myself 7 years later getting married to Bridget Bailey, who became Bridget Barker, and I just think it's one of those stories. I was just telling a young man last time. I was talking to him on the phone. I said, "You've got to write goals down. You've got to do it." So every year we write our goals down and we cover the key areas.
That's really pretty awesome. I mean, that, you know, B&B, and then her maiden name was a B, and then her married name was a B too. That's That's pretty cool.
So then we have Brooke and Blake, right? So everybody starts to say, gosh, that's kind of cheesy because you're naming your kids after your company. And then I tell them the story. And people ask me too, say, why didn't you change the name of the company? You know, why'd you keep it B&B? Well, when I was 18 and I bought it, I thought it was going to be too much work to change all the paperwork with the vendors, all the paperwork with the vendors. And so I just left it. So,
you know, the do y'all have pets, animals?
None.
Okay.
We have I have allergies, so we don't have pets.
I got it. Well, I mean, that reminds me of like LBJ, you know, Lyndon Baines Johnson, Lady Bird Johnson, and their daughter's initials are LBJ.
Okay.
And they had a dog, and it was named Little Beagle Johnson. You know, like everything. Anyway.
I love it. I love it. Yeah.
And LBJ, I'm not a fan. Okay. You may be, and greatly so. There's history how, you know, he became as powerful as he did.
Yeah.
And you might not like it if you, but you may. I don't know. So, anyway. But he's a historical figure, so I'm not taking that away. Okay,
absolutely. Sorry. Yeah. Well, it's just something, you know, we were talking about goal writing, and it's just something I still do to this day and has been ingrained in me. I think you meet most people that have had any level of success, and they've written goals. You know, now maybe that's not, but the statistics on it is crazy, right? Just hitting them if you write them down, period, let alone look at them and actually put some milestones on them. And
think about it.
And
and
execute on them.
And then so actually the action, you know, faith without works is dead. Faith without action is dead. You know, and this is just me talking, you know, it might not happen if you don't have a hand in it, whatever it may be. So anyway, I don't want to sidetrack you. I'm sorry.
Yeah. No. Well, there's a biblical aspect of writing.
No question.
Yeah, for sure.
Right. It reminds me of the three lepers, you know, and you know, they're outside the city and they're like, well, why sit we here lest we die? You know, let's at least go. And there's the whole story there. It's like, you know, they took action. You know?
That's right.
Paul, show me your faith. You know, show me your works by your faith. I'll show you my faith by my works.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah,
I believe in
100%
action works. So,
yeah, absolutely.
And I'm happy to say that I continually write goals down and adjust them and improve them. So that's a characteristic and a habit that, you know, I relate to. So anyway,
doesn't surprise me at all. It's just, it's staggering how many people don't, right?
You know, it never really dawned on me. I just think people know what I know and do what I do or think like I think or what have you. But that, in fact, is not true. And so
another mentor given comment was observe the masses and do the opposite.
Oh, no question.
So there's a lot of advice in that. So if the masses, most of them aren't writing down goals and that's a key ingredient, you probably ought to do it.
I'm a complete contrarian. I mean, just almost to a fault. But anyway, okay.
Yeah.
It's not about me. This is about Mr. Barker.
Yeah.
Okay, so.
You're part of the story. So I don't know if I'm making this too long, but we'll keep going.
Well, you know, I'm hungry. I'm fat for a reason. So we're on limited time. But I think we've got a good, you know, at tops, probably 45 minutes left.
All right. Yeah.
So, but
well, I'll speed it up.
Okay.
I'll speed it up.
We were talking before the cameras might have been on, but it's not going to, you know, it's like B-roll that it's never going to see the light of day.
Yeah.
And he was saying that he can talk longer than you can say no. I love that. So
that's a client that I got that from that'll probably not be watching one of these videos. That's just my guess. Not because he's a bad guy. He just probably isn't that interested in it. But he is a legend in the industry. But let me fast forward a little bit then, okay? So
okay, control things, especially the narrative, but you started your second business and I said earlier, cause I can see, and I think anybody listening can see or hear how the activities that you have done since high school and, you know, MLM and the mentors that you've had and the work and, you know, there's, you can tell you've taken previous experiences and built upon that, you know, so, which is very interesting to me. All right. Sometimes when you're having fun, it goes a little long. So we went a little long today. We're going to end it here and pick up the rest in part two next week. Thank you for listening.
Thank you for joining us on the Banking with Life podcast. If you're watching on YouTube, make sure to like and subscribe and click on that little notification bell. Otherwise, join us on Apple Podcasts and Stitcher for weekly content.